Hi, I'm Samantha, a past guest on CJAM's Handy Link. You're listening to Handy Link on CJAM 99.1 FM, reaching high ground in Windsor, Detroit.
Welcome to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association, an organization that promotes recreational and athletic opportunities for individuals with disabilities in Windsor, Essex. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Today's episode will be a look at the risks to relationships for those who are suffering with or in the early stages of recovery from addictions. The first segment of our show, we'll hear about this from Dr. Donna Ferguson from CAMH. So tell me a little bit about some of the risks to relationships for those who are recovering from addictions or still struggling with them.
Well, you know, part of the risk is that they don't really, you know, some people don't really know and understand the severity sometimes of their own addiction and you know, how well they're recovering or not. And I think that being in a relationship when you're still getting healthy and trying to navigate a relationship, which can often be difficult even when you're not using substances, it can make it more challenging and can actually maybe increase the substance use issues as well.
So can this lead to things like impaired judgment, thinking a relationship is viable when in fact this
absolutely. And I believe that, and I've read, you know, that, you know, people will often make different choices even in partners when they are not using substances versus when they are. So, you know, that in and of itself is impaired judgment. You know, you're not even making the choices that you would normally make. And even within the relationship, you know, you're not able to, you know, navigate the relationship in a healthy way that you would normally be able to if you weren't using substances.
So what are some of the methods a person can use to break this cycle of destructive relationship and destructive substance?
Well, I think one thing is if you're not in the relationship, you know, refrain from getting into a relationship. That, you know, people say that, you know, you really need to work on getting healthy yourself. So, you know, even when you're halfway or three-quarters way through recovery, you know, you've gone to rehab or you're dealing with it through a psychologist or however you're getting treated, depending on how severe the issue is, you're still healing and recovering. And when you might think prematurely that you're good, you know, take time. They say even a year after really you feel like you've recovered is when you should delve into a relationship. So not during that recovery process. If you are in an existing relationship, I think it's really still taking the time. But, you know, couples therapy might be useful during that time. If, you know, you're in the relationship already, having the partner see someone as well so that you're not developing sort of unhealthy behaviors or codependence. So those are some ways that you can deal with it.
So I'm guessing the recovery process takes time, and someone were to say, I'm cured, I'm all good, that would be just denial.
Yes. Sorry, say that again.
So I'm guessing the process takes time, and people don't just get healed in a whirlwind.
No. No, they don't. And, you know, when it comes to substance use as well, the process is really a lifetime process in a lot of ways. I mean, even when you are say, healed, if you want to say that, even when it comes to mental health issues in general, you know, there's always risk of relapse. There's always risk that, you know, things can get bad again. And so it's important to note that recovery is really ongoing. It's an ongoing process. It doesn't just stop, you know, when you leave rehab, for example, and you feel like you're good and you're not using in the way that you want to use. So I think it's important to note that it's really a lifetime of recovery in a lot of ways for people. And it's important to monitor that, especially when in relationships and trying to get into relationships.
But for one who switches from being addicted to a chemical and just needs to be in a relationship, isn't that swapping one vice for another?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Thinking this is what I need to make me feel good, to make me feel better. Using the relationship, you know, looking for fulfillment in the relationship or from the other person. This, you know, similar things you might be looking for from the use of the substance or eating. You know, I mean, you can swap vices in many different ways, but you're really not solving the real problem.
So if you could send any one message to the community about why it is a person should focus on their recovery before the relationship, before they're ready, what would you say?
I would say get healthy first. Be healthy. You know, I think that's the key to really knowing and understanding, you know, even what you want in a relationship, being healthy enough to understand and make the right choices and have the right judgment. And then you can, you can develop that healthy relationship that you so want and need.
So are there any particular methods you found effective to help people struggling with addictions to stay on the straight and narrow in this sense?
I think it varies. In my experience, it varies from person to person, depending on, again, the severity of the addiction. So if you've got somebody who, you know, decides to do what we call the abstinence model, which can be, for example, like an AA or NA, Narcotics Anonymous model, those are examples of abstinence models, then for that person, you know, really what you would say staying clean would be important is finding ways to not be triggered by what would have triggered you in the first place to use. You know, sometimes it's people, sometimes it's places, really trying to stay on that path of recovery. And some people actually choose what's called a harm reduction approach. And with a harm reduction approach, you know, that is where they might still use, but they would use in a less harmful way. You know, they would choose times to when they would use. They would have more control over their use. And so I think it really varies from person to person, depending on which method they choose and how they're choosing to recover. And again, depending on the severity of their use.
Like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Sure, of course, thank you.
In this next segment of our show, we'll hear from Sunil Bodai from Renascent. So tell me a little bit about your thoughts on the risks to those in recovery when it comes to relationships.
So from my perspective, I work with a lot of people who are just embarking on their journeys of recovery. The major risk is that the effort that it takes in order to be in recovery and stay in recovery, the focus has to be strictly on themselves. So once that focus wavers when it's too early and focuses on another person, the risk of relapse becomes really, really high. When a person is in their active stage of addiction, what happens is that they develop the ability to not relate to anyone else, but to relate only to their substance. The substance is the major relationship in their life, you can say. So if they get into another relationship early on before they figure out how to relate to themselves again without the substance, the person they get into the relationship with can be simply a substitution for the substance.
So I'm guessing it requires a certain level of honesty. You have to actually put in the effort to get into recovery. It's not just, oh, I'm magically cured sort of thing.
Right, exactly. The recovery has to be experienced as a process rather than I'm here and I'm fixed and I'm fine, right? It has to be I am at a certain place in my life now without a substance where I feel confident enough to be able to relate to somebody else in order to get into a relationship.
So I'm guessing that someone coming out of an addiction might struggle with issues like denial about that.
Absolutely. I mean, when I speak with people who are, like I said, just embarking on their journeys of recovery, there's a lot of wanting to jump back into life 100% right away. And so any kind of course correction around relationships and things like that, there is a lot of denial around readiness. Basically, the thinking is that they're fully ready to jump back into real life on its terms without thinking about risks anymore, right?
So I'm guessing that someone, especially coming out of a chemical dependence, might be a little more impressionable.
Yeah, the vulnerability factor is really high, really, really high when they're coming out of a chemical addiction, right? So anything that serves as a distraction from the reality of recovery, because recovery is very, very difficult, anything that serves as a distraction is a huge temptation. So a relationship, another person who comes along that they feel can give their life meaning or purpose is a huge temptation.
So what sorts of methods are available that actually work to help a recovering addict veer away from these tendencies?
Well, I know like the 12-step program and in treatment, we talk about it. The 12-step program reinforces this quite strongly around readiness for relationships. I work at a treatment facility called Renaissance, and at our center, the colloquial way of explaining this is we tell people who are in recovery with us, the guideline is for the first year after you come out of treatment, get a plant. And if you could keep it alive for that first year, then get a pet. And if you could keep the plant and the pet alive for the first 2 years, then on the third year, you might consider getting into a relationship. So that's sort of the offhand colloquial kind of way to explain it. However, quite scientifically, what we tell people is that they need to pay attention to their feelings of returning to themselves before the substance took hold.
So
that means when you... you need to, like you say, honesty. Pay attention to your honest feelings about who you are and how your life is going. And once you can relate to yourself well enough without the presence of the substance, as in be honest about your family, be honest with your friends about what's happened, be honest with your workplace, be able to hold on to a job, those kinds of things, when you've rebuilt yourself enough, that's when you know the possibility of a relationship is real.
So for someone who's lived their whole life with the addiction and had no real sense of identity beforehand, coming out of an addiction, there might be this tendency to cling to the old life, thinking that that's all there ever is for me, and it could be a shock to them, couldn't it?
Life without the substance, like I said, the substance functions as the main relationship in their life. You can look at it that way. Living life without substance is nightmarish for a lot of people. They don't know anything else. So the challenges are absolutely huge. I'd
like to thank you for taking time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Sure.
Handy Link will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
Hey, University of Windsor students, do you have late classes? Are you new in town or just feel nervous or unsafe when walking alone? Download the Safe Lancer app and use FriendWalk. FriendWalk lets you send your location in real time to a friend so they make sure you get to your destination safely. If you or your friend suspects you are in danger, either of you can trigger a call to emergency services. When you reach your destination, finish your trip and disconnect safely. A message brought to you by the University of Windsor Campus Police Services. The Safe Lancer app is available for Android and Apple devices.
Welcome back to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association, an organization that promotes recreational and athletic opportunities for individuals with disabilities in Windsor, Essex. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, we heard from Dr. Donna Ferguson and Sunil Bodai, both of whom were telling us a little bit about the risks in relationships for those who are struggling with addictions. To follow up on this point, in this segment of our show, we'll hear from Tom Littlewood. So tell me a little bit about your experiences working with those who struggle with addictions and relationships.
Well, first of all, I've had lived experience. I was an addict in the 60s, and I went through trauma as a child, and that's the combination, basically. You know, everyone's talking about the opioid crisis, but I don't believe we are having an opioid crisis. I think we're having a trauma crisis. And the drug of the moment is opiates, but it could be crystal meth in a couple of months. It could be other fentanyl analogs, but that's the real challenge, is trying to get the stigma of drugs reduced so that we could actually deal with the real problem, which is trauma. And that's why Dan's Legacy has a group of trauma-informed therapists that work with these young people that are experiencing pre-addiction and addiction issues to try and deal with the trauma before it becomes an entrenched addiction.
So for an addict getting into a relationship, would you say there's an increased risk of making the wrong choice or an impulsive one?
An addict is someone who hasn't dealt with their trauma. So putting that person into a relationship, they're much more likely to bring that addictive personality into the relationship, and that's not going to be healthy either. You know, there's lots of addictions besides drugs and alcohol. There's sex, there's gambling, there's workaholism, there's all that stuff, social media. So when you bring someone that has unresolved trauma into a relationship, they tend to relive it within the relationship.
So it could come down to substituting one vice for another.
Yeah, well, human beings are desperate to self-regulate. We've been self-regulated for a couple of 100,000 years when we lived in harmony with Mother Nature. But since we've paved her over, with concrete, we basically unregulated ourselves. We have unnatural diets. We don't get the right amount of exercise. Our minds, which were occupied with just survival and living within a small community, are now overloaded with the threats of global warming, climate change, Ebola in Africa. The whole world's problems come right through our eye gate, and we have no way to self-regulate. And self-regulation is the key to someone living a balanced life and having a balanced relationship. So what happens is they try to self-regulate with drugs or whatever. And the combination of trauma and self-regulation, they amplify each other, which creates this kind of desperate need. And when you get into a relationship with not knowing how to self-regulate, you will tend to get into the cycle of abuse where the power figure, usually the male, you know, releases his tension from not being able to self-regulate on his partner. This is the cycle of violence that we see so often in relationships. And the opposite partner, whether it's male or female, the one who basically deals with trauma through and not self-regulation through finding someone to control them, gets into the same, but the opposite polar of the cycle of violence, and then it can get very, very dangerous in relationships.
So for an addict just coming out of the cycle, would you say they're automatically ready or if they say to themselves, I can handle this, I'm a week out of addiction, I can do this. Do you think that's a rational approach?
Well, I don't believe there is any recovery from addiction or any of the addictions like we talked about without insight and empowerment, which comes through therapy. Most people that go through recovery programs, the typical 12-step recovery program, especially young people, only learn how not to do drugs or do their addiction when they're in the recovery program. And as soon as they get back into a relationship situation, they will tend to be triggered and go back into their addiction or adopt another addiction. That's the crisis that we get into. I've seen young moms come out of recovery and say they're getting clean for their children, but the same person, you know, 6 months later will tell me that they're using drugs so that they can handle their children. So there is no recovery without therapy. And this is the biggest problem we've got in the recovery world right now is most of these organizations, worst case, they're businesses, best case, they're either personality cults or, a place to go to get you off the street. They need, you know, to have therapy, one-to-one therapy built within their programs if they're going to be successful.
So if you could send any message to the community about what's really effective in staying strong in facing an addiction, what would you say?
Deal with the trauma, the drugs, the gambling, the workaholism, the sex, the social media addictions are the rattle on the snake. If you pay attention to the rattle, the other end's going to bite you. We need to get trauma-informed therapists involved in all levels of addiction recovery work. And that's the key message. That's what Dan's Legacy is all about.
So do you find that the work at Dan's Legacy is typically effective in helping those who are struggling in this way?
Yes. And the best way to deal with someone is not wait till they're fully entrenched in an addiction. Most people who have suffered trauma and are dysregulated start to act out at around 15 to 18, where they begin to be dealing with anxiety, depression, eating and sleeping disorders, and self-medicating behavior. And if you can reach them then, when that 15 to 25-year-old window, it costs far, far less, an average of about $1,000 to $2,000 in therapy. If you wait until they're entrenched addicts, and when you add all the costs, police, ambulances, injection galleries, hospitals, prisons, it's about $1 million per addict, never mind the trauma and damage they've done to their community.
So, in your time with Dan's Legacy, has there been any success that you've experienced in helping someone deal with this?
Oh, it's incredibly intense. We have, there are kids who are living rough right now in a park. You know, I've had half a dozen overdoses and suicide attempts in the last couple of months. This is right on the edge work. These kids, and I say kids under 25, are basically right on the cutting edge. If they don't get help now, they will either kill themselves, or they will move into entrenched addictions or lifelong homelessness, all these kinds of chronic problems. And so, yeah, there's a real push to put on programs that are right now available for these kids when they ask. Because it's not good enough to say 6 months. 6 months to an 18-year-old that's dealing with these issues, it's forever. We need to be ready when they ask. And that's the big issue, is getting the governments and other organizations to access the funding so that we can have enough therapists available so that when these kids ask, we're there ready and waiting. Now, the BC government has just created a new ministry called Ministry of Mental Health and Addictions, and they were able to fund us, and some of the health authorities have funded us, but we could be twice the size, and there'd still be a waiting list with the amount of, just in our Vancouver area, amount of kids. 1,000 youth age out of care a year, by definition. Those kids have been through trauma. And that's the same almost in every province. And and we really need to be there for those kids specifically.
Like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Sure.
My friends, addictions are a disability just as much as any other kind. The fact is, it's not just going to go away because we magically say, oh, I was cured in a whirlwind. Allowing yourself these impulses, these myths that there is a magic cure, a magic button, and then impulsively getting into a relationship, which may be safe. You may find the right person. You may be extremely lucky in that sense. But more than likely, you could find yourself dating Mr. or Miss Mayhem. The fact is, you have to take time to take adequate care in these situations. Truth is, not a lot of people are willing to put in the recognition and the understanding that this is a part of who they are. It has impacted them. It will impact them. It does take an incredible amount of strength to deal with such. And to just substitute one type of addiction for another, just saying, oh, I need this person to make me feel validated. I mean, yeah, it's an easy trap to fall into. At that point, you can find yourself very impressionable, listening to those who you ought to reasonably be able to trust, someone like a teacher, a doctor, a church official. But the fact is, you're not fully in control, as much as you might think you are. You might say to yourself, yeah, I'm fine. However, the emotional highs and lows can be a very real and a very dangerous thing. And emotional disabilities are among the more difficult to recognize. It's not just romantic relationships. There's the way you interact with everyone. You might put on one face for how you deal with people and be all kind and pleasant. But if you're feeling the results of a chemical imbalance, you're feeling it, and it will affect you. I'm not saying this to put a hopeless or a negative face on the whole thing. There is always hope. However, it depends upon the strength of the individual involved. You can't just say, oh, I've been magically cured, or this person fully understands and accepts me. You can't just go charging in. Yeah, we all want to do that in relationships. There's an old saying about that, my friends. The illusion is more real than the person sometimes, especially in the start of relationships. However, couple that with an imbalance or coming out of a difficult situation can be that much amplified. Yeah, you're going to want the fast cure, the fast way out of what you consider darkness. We all do. However, giving in to the first notion that comes into your head might not be the safest thing. Sometimes, yeah, you will find the right someone being there to support you. But they're still going to be there. Just take some time. Get to know yourself before getting to know another. Understand that you are a person of value and character, but you have to address the wounds first, the real nature of them. I'm glad Tom addressed the point of trauma. Fact is, if you can't process what you've been through, how are you to be expected to give yourself completely in a trusting manner and in a strong manner to any relationship, whether it be business, romantic, friendship, what have you. When you interact with somebody, they deserve to know who you really are. And you should be present in that sense. Just give it your best. Take some time. Recover. Get strong. This has been Handy Link. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you we're all equal. So get on out there and have yourselves a good one. Something tells me you've earned it, folks, and we'll see you next week.